From KPFK, Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Studies have shown that about 3/4 of all American women dye their hair. And yet the chemicals found in most hair dyes are considered toxic and even carcinogenic. Hair salon workers who regularly apply hair dye are far more likely to develop certain kinds of cancer. Government regulatory agencies do not prevent the toxic chemicals from being used in commercially available hair dyes. Today, we'll speak with an environmentalist who examined her own decades-long reliance on toxic hair dyes and has written a book about it. Ronnie Citron Fink is the editorial director for the Environmental Defense Fund's Moms Clean Air Force. She's also a contributor to A Glorious Freedom on Being a Woman, Getting Older, and Living an Extraordinary Life. Yahoo named her one of its top 10 living green experts. She joins me to discuss her new book, True Roots: What Quitting Hair Dye Taught Me About Health and Beauty. Welcome to the program, Ronnie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So let's talk about how you came to write this book. You dyed your hair for 25 years. It's something a lot of American women, I mentioned 75% of women dye their hair. A lot of American women do it without really thinking about it. Once we start to see gray hairs, we think, oh, we should dye our hair because gray hair makes us look prematurely older. And if it's sold on store shelves or if salons offer it, what's the harm? Is that essentially your thinking when you spent, I believe, more than 20 years dyeing your hair?
Oh, yes, certainly. I started when I was a young mother and right around 30 years old. And I didn't know anybody who didn't cover their gray. My mother, who's still alive, had colored her hair her whole, as long as I can remember. I never saw any gray hair. And up until my 50s, I didn't even have too many friends that had gray hair. So it wasn't really on my radar until I started working for in the environmental field about 10 years ago. And I started working in reading more and more about toxic chemicals in our products. And I was at a meeting in Washington, D.C. in the environmental defense offices. And we were talking about the products that we use that have all these chemicals, and that we really don't know the body burden, how they connect with each other, the lipstick, the makeup, the hair dye, all of our personal care products. And I looked around the room and I watched my colleagues were wiping off their lipstick and peeling their nail polish, and all of a sudden I could kind of feel my head tingle, like, what was I doing? And I asked the environmental health specialist what exactly was the reason why so many women dye their hair. And she came back and she told me that the economic success of hair dye collides so powerfully with popular demand that the task of understanding the landscape goes beyond science and law. So then I had to kind of like regroup a little bit and of course call the salon and cancel my appointment, which I did immediately. And I just started researching. And in my research, I learned that, we have this idea that, it's on the shelf and this is America and it must be safe. And that's not necessarily the case. It comes from the FDA, and the FDA has an industry panel that actually
decides. The Food and Drug Administration, right?
The Food and Drug Administration, yes. And I work actually in my work with climate change much closer with the EPA. So I knew about the EPA, but I didn't know that much about the FDA and how it worked. And as I started researching, I found that there were industry panels that were actually the that were making the decisions about whether or not our products were safe.
Right. Our American industries have extraordinary control over which products are sold to the public and which aren't. They are unfortunately invited into the regulatory agencies to give their recommendations. And other countries might apply what we call the precautionary principle, which is chemicals have to be proven to be safe before they can be sold to the public. In the US, we turn that over on its head, that you have to, that Americans are guinea pigs, and only when it is proven that a product is unsafe, and usually through lawsuits and public pressure, are products pulled off the shelves, which I suppose applies quite strongly to the hair dye industry.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And manufacturers, they lobby heavily to keep their products on the shelves. And there are very few substitutions for hair dye, whereas you could, for the ingredients in hair dye, for instance, you can, for moisturizers, you can find a bunch of different kinds of healthier alternatives. But for hair dye, not so much. I mean, there's ammonia in hair dye. There's a chemical called PPD. That's a coal tar dye that's derived from petroleum, and it's been linked to cancer. There's lead acetate, mostly in men's dyes, that are those progressive dyes that men use. And the danger with that is that they also put it on their beards. And there's formaldehyde and all the straightening that goes along with some of our hair products, which is a known carcinogen. So there are a lot of issues. And actually, like the U.S. National Center for Biotechnology, which is part of NIH, which is the Institutes of Health, they consider hair dye as a major factor in certain cancers, as well as the American Cancer Society classifies some of the chemicals used in hair dye as anticipated to be human carcinogens.
And we know that, I mentioned in my introduction, that salon workers, hair colorists, are at higher risk of certain cancers. I mean, certainly long-term exposure to this dye is likely to trigger certain cancers, because these are known carcinogens. So it shouldn't be a surprise, right?
Right, right. And actually, the studies that have been done on hairdressers' health. So has not been studies done on individuals. And it's very hard to separate these chemicals because, women use approximately 16 products every morning. I once checked my products that I used, and I thought, oh, I'm pretty clean and healthy, and I use 12 products every day. So we have no idea how these interact. But with hairdressers who are using these products every single day, they were able to do some studies. And actually, there was a very big research study done called Beauty and Its Beast. And the Women's Voices for the Earth, which is an organization, nonprofit organization, looked at salons and found that, that it's such a hazardous place to work because of these chemicals. And it's not just, the chemicals that they're using by applying, they're also breathing in these chemicals,
are very strongly scented, or you can smell them, they're volatile compounds.
Right. So the differences, and you can just walk into a salon and know.
Right.
You kind of get bowled over by the smells, and so hairdressers are at definite increased risk, and there are things that they can do, like wear gloves and keep the windows open in the salon, and choose not to do certain hair procedures.
So in addition to hair dyes being bad for human beings, what happens when the dye is washed down the drain? Does it impact our oceans? Does it impact our environment?
Yes, it does. It definitely impacts our waters. I actually interviewed for in the course of my writing, Paul Hawken, who's an environmentalist who wrote Drawdown. And he told me that 3 billion pounds of hair products, chemicals, bleach, and perm solutions, and ammonia, and the color formations all get rinsed down the drain and into our waterways. And that alone, given with all the other products that all these other personal care products that get that rinsed down the drain. Of course, when we, with climate change making our waterways rising, what's happening now is we're having flooding in certain spots, and that flooding kind of brings these chemicals into our landscape, and of course it affects bioaccumulates in the fish and affects plant life and animal life and human life.
So let's talk about the pressures facing women, or, you know, why women feel the need to dye their hair. I mean, men who age are considered attractive when they sport their natural gray, but women are instantly seen as prematurely aging or washed up and really face this strong pressure. And in fact, I want to play for you and our audience a video of an ad from 1957 when the first commercial hair dyes were made available. And this is an ad by Clairol. And it just sort of comes out and says the things that we consider today as being pretty shocking in terms of the pressures facing women.
Does she or doesn't she? Does she or doesn't she?
Color her hair? Well, that's her own affair, really. But this I will say, with Miss Clairol, the color looks so natural. Only your hairdresser knows for sure. We hairdressers see the most wonderful changes take place. Hair like this, for instance, dull, streaked with gray. Even with this perfect makeup, she looks faded, unattractive. Now see her after Miss Clairol. In minutes, she looks years younger. Her hair sparkles with radiant color. The gray is hidden, and the hair itself is so silky, so ladylike.
Does she or doesn't she?
If I didn't know for sure, even I'd wonder. That's why we hairdressers love to use Miss Clairol Hair Color Bath and give it by the millions every year.
For hair color that looks so natural, only your hairdresser knows for sure. Try Miss Clairol. You'll love it.
And that is a 1957 ad for Miss Clairol, a hair dye that the ad essentially, you know, made it clear that the woman sporting gray hair looked faded and unattractive. But after she dyed her hair, she became ladylike and had sparkling hair. This is part of a broader conversation around the beauty industry and patriarchy and the pressures facing women. But Ronnie, this is a huge, huge pressure that women have to struggle to fight against, right?
I certainly did.
And for our radio audience, I should say you are sporting a gorgeous mane of silver on your head right now.
Thank you. I certainly did. I work in a young field. I work in the environmental field. I am not, you know, young. I'm most certainly middle-aged. And I would imagine my hair was this gray, probably in my early 40s, I would think, but I didn't stop until I was in my 50s. And, I have learned that kind of sexism and, you know, definitely comes into the workplace when it comes to older women. And it's very interesting because a lot of people ask me about whether, you know, that they say, I couldn't do it. Like either I'm not married or I'm working and I have to keep my hair colored and I have to keep up a certain look. And, I actually, to be very honest with you, found it incredibly empowering to stop. One, I was doing something really good for my body, I felt, but also I felt that I was putting a good example for my daughter a 30-year-old daughter, and I really want her to see who I am. And I write about a lot of this in the book, and how this kind of impacts how I actually feel more comfortable in my skin now.
Interestingly enough, there is a resurgence of women proudly sporting their gray these days, so much so that gray hair is now becoming fashionable, and younger women are using hair dye to dye their hair gray.
Yes. Well, I think that younger people have always used dyes to kind of beautify their appearance. And this is just another example of that. But I think that this whole, from my research into the hair dye industry, it's covering gray, which is really what the salons really bank on. Is keeping women. It's a very intensive process of doing, you know, even young women who do it and have dark roots have to do it I was doing it when I started once a month, once every 6 weeks. And then I was after every 2 weeks, my roots would be, you know, like the minute I'd walk out the salon.
And this is, of course, a great thing for the hair dye industry. Once you start dyeing your hair, you become entirely dependent on the hair dye. It's something that you feel like you have to continue doing because your roots show, and letting your hair grow out involves having several inches of white hair at your roots. The transition can be, you know, months and months long. And it's a financial drain on women's pockets, and not to mention, of course, the conversation we started out with, which is the health impact, the environmental impact. So you want people as a whole to quit hair dye, men, women, everyone in between?
Oh, I don't say that. I think people need, I do feel.
So the real question is, are there natural alternatives?
There are. There actually are. And I did a bunch of research into that too. And I think you can find some hennas. Some henna has some of the chemicals that I mentioned and that are mentioned in the book, and I would look really carefully, along with tattooing. I didn't know that.
And you can tattoo hair?
No, just tattoo ink that you would use to your bloodstream. It's the same. It's one of the same coal tar dyes used in dark hair dye. In some of the tattoo ink, not in all. It's really important, and I think women are getting this more and more. Women and men are getting that. We should be demanding what's in our products. That we need that the transparency. We need to know what the ingredients are. We need to know what the impact of those ingredients are, and then we can make, as consumers, to make choices. And of course, we can also choose to advocate for cleaner hair products and cleaner hair dye by boycotting. And maybe I hadn't thought about it this way, but maybe I'm boycotting. there are things that we can do, and it's certainly really important to look at look at the product closely.
You have a section in your book about Black women and hair care products as well, and the impacts to their health. And we know Black women are more likely to get certain kinds of cancers than non-Black women. Is the hair care or the hair products industry in part to blame for some of that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I think that the studies haven't been done, to be honest with you. There was a very big study out of Rutgers University that found that the very dark dyes, now I had very black hair, so I still have dark eyebrows, and I used very, very dark dyes. And those dark dyes are 51, they found that have a 51% increased risk for breast cancer.
Wow.
And Black women have an increased risk from other issues also. And that just kind of adds to the body burden. But it's really, really important for us to keep advocating for these studies, especially the ones that really impact women. And of course, the hairdressing industry is primarily women. And so it definitely is something that impacts us as a gender.
Well, Ronnie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and appreciate the book very much. I'll certainly be taking a good, strong look at my own hair and hair care products. I sport a lot of gray. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Ronnie Citron-Fink. She's the editorial director for the Environmental Defense Fund's Moms Clean Air Force. We've been discussing her new book, True Roots, What Quitting Hair Dye Taught Me About Health and Beauty. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.